Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Cavs get the big win over the Thunder. The Cavs is good at 32-4 to talk about it. Our next guest hosts the Beyond the Arc podcast daily, live at noon Eastern on YouTube, wherever you get your podcast as well. That's where you can find it. The great Bill Ryder, now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Bill, how it goes, bud?
What up? It goes well. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Well, it's great to have you here. I am curious, just I know you watched the Cavs Thunder last night. What were your takeaways from the game?
Oh my God! Well, I have. First of all, game of the year on paper, game of the year in practice, and I think the overarching takeaway. And I'll be very curious whether the two of you, the fans there, are skeptical on this. I think it proves that they're the best team in the NBA. I mean, we're almost halfway through the regular season. I know you have to prove it in the playoffs, and that's a different thing, and maybe an interesting conversation for Donovan Mitchell and other guys. But right now, at this point, what we can assess. Cleveland Cavaliers are the best team in the league. They're one of the best teams at this point in a regular season we've ever seen, and I would love for the many GMs I talk to anonymously out there to start giving them a little bit more respect than they have up until yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, Bill, I think we all can agree about them being the best regular season NBA team, but we do wonder about the postseason. And I don't know if Cavs fans have just been burned over the past couple of years, but I would say a lot of Cavs fans are ready to dive into the idea that they can beat Boston. Are you there, that this Cavs team can beat what is a great Boston team?
Yeah, I am. Look, the Boston thing is really interesting, and I think it's interesting even beyond what they were last year, because their philosophy this season is to shoot the most three-point shots per game in the history of the league. And I think if you're just talking in the vacuum about how you beat the Celtics, there's this really interesting reality of variance in terms of they're going to take 40 or more three-point shots. They're going to take 50-some games, and there are going to be games where they don't make very many of them, and you're going to be able to beat them. And there are going to be games where they make too many of them, and you're going to be able to beat them. And so I think attacking the Celtics is really interesting because of that and some other things. But sort of that micro reality aside, yeah, I'm in on the Cavs. Donovan Mitchell, and is he good enough in the playoffs, and can he handle the moment? That I think it's a very legitimate question, and he didn't play well last night. He did not shoot particularly well, and Cleveland still won a huge game against the best defense in the league, against in a matchup where the NBA was pumping this thing and pushing this thing and sending people notes about, like, wanted to make it a big deal. It felt big. To win that game, I think, says something, as much as you can judge it in January, about the Cavs' ability to handle pressure. So, yeah, well, all of that to say, yes, this is one of three teams that are easily, clearly legitimate NBA contenders this season.
Bill, looking to the Cavs-Celtics, because something you said I thought was interesting, the variance on their three-point shot. They're attempting 50 three-pointers a game this year. Which is pornographic, but the Cavs are still top five in three-point attempts as well this season at about 41 per game. I'm curious whether the fact both teams are so reliant on the three ball, whether that hurts the Cavs in that matchup, or whether just the extreme excessive rate that Chicago shoots at puts them on a different spectrum?
Yeah, I don't think that it hurts them. I mean, look, here's the thing that hurts them is that the Cavs don't defend the three-point shot particularly well. It depends on the day, right? But they're 21st or 22nd there in that matchup. My personal perspective, and I love the word pornographic because it is pornographic, what Joe Mazzulla is doing. We don't have a sample size because this has never been done. We just saw the Celtics win an NBA championship in statistically one of the most dominant runs, certainly one of the 10 most dominant runs in history. I don't know that you need to introduce this element of luck. I don't think you need to introduce, if you're Boston, this idea and element of if things go cold, and they do sometimes, you might give away a couple games in a series. You don't have to. So I think it benefits everybody. I think if Boston hunted for better shots from the three-point line rather than all the shots from the three-point line, they would be like the team last year that was really hard to just get a game off of in the playoffs. So, yeah, I think it benefits the Cavs and anybody else, because if you get lucky, if the variance goes your way, Cleveland may give you a game or two games in the playoffs because they just don't shoot well from the three-point line that night, and they're forcing it, and that means you only have to grind out a couple wins maybe or three wins against a really good basketball team.
At the end of last season, Bill, it felt like everyone was deciding, like, do we want to break up the front courts or do we want to break up the back courts? Are you breaking up? And yeah. That was the argument. And what's funny is that Kobe Altman decided he didn't want to do either. But everyone, every fan we talked to and every radio host in the city decided, like, what part they wanted to do. Were you a front court? Were you a back court guy? Which one do you want to do? How do we all get it so wrong in that this core four could work together and seems like it is working together?
Yeah, that reminds me. I need to text Kobe an apology. I thought they should break up both of them. I know, so that's why he's a GM and I write about it, I suppose. I mean, I think the answer is Kenny Atkinson, and yeah, halfway through the season, but I have a ballot. He's my coach of the year, and if you could only put one name, it wouldn't even be a question, because especially on offense, what he's been able to do with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley not being problems when they play together, but being the opposite. And some of that is, I think they've utilized, obviously Allen's not a shooter, but when you get him near the rim, he's really, 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 really good. And Mobley's not Steph Curry, but he's improved in terms of his three-point shooting and even his handle. So that makes it a lot more, it makes it so those guys can play together and thrive together. And then you look at the backcourt and what they've done. Obviously it's been incredible. And this is a team that doesn't entirely rely on Donovan Mitchell to win big games. You saw that last night, which is why they have the best offense in the NBA. So for me, the difference is, there was just a vision in Kenny Atkinson and what he saw and what he's been able to scheme. And, you know, give some credit. He studied under Steve Kerr as an assistant coach, the last 2 or 3 years, and was with Ty Lue before that. So he learned some things or improved on some things from his time as a head coach in Brooklyn. And I think that's the answer. They got the right guy in who saw these pieces and said, I can make this work, and he has.
Bill, what can the NBA do, or is there anything the NBA can do to make games like last night more commonplace across the regular season?
It is such a great, it's the best question of the day in terms of what the NBA is thinking about. And if I had the answer, I would drive a really nice car and live in a big place in Manhattan, because I'd be working as the number two guy to Adam Silver, because that's what he wants to figure out. And you're right. It's not just like, how do you do it? Cleveland, and my wife's from Ohio, but Cleveland's not a major market. And Oklahoma City, I've lived there, is a tiny market. Not like this was New York, L.A. last night. It's just really, really, really good basketball. This is what Adam Silver would tell you, or the people who work for Adam Silver would tell you, is that last night's game and the energy around it and the excitement around it is the vision of Adam Silver, that you're basically going to create parity and the best organizations are going to rise up with how the CBA works and the second apron and all the things they've been doing. And this is the reality. I think the actual fact is, you have two historically great teams in terms of their starts. But whoever won last night was going to be on track, and the Thunder are just behind this, of a 73-win regular season. It isn't very often that two teams with two of the best starts in the century, 24, 25 years into that century, play each other almost halfway through a season and have barely lost any games and are on these crazy winning streaks. So I think in some ways it's a one-off, but the NBA would tell you this is what happens when you have a bunch of young talent flooding into the zone of the NBA. And you give other markets the chance who are well-run to build a success story without having to be on the coast.
Darius yesterday spent the day campaigning that this team has four All-Stars. He did it before the game on ESPN. He did it after the game on ESPN. Realistically, how many of these Cavs players make the All-Star team?
Yeah, I better figure that out because I'm one of the media members who vote for that thing too. There are four guys where you can make a really strong case. Look, Donovan Mitchell's an all-star for me. Evan Mobley is probably, he might be defensive player of the year, but if he's not, right, he's going to finish second to Victor Wembanyama probably. So those two, I think those, I value defense incredibly. So it's two or three, right? Because Garland, I think, is an all-star. I'm not even sure there's a debate there, just in terms of his competition in the Eastern Conference. It's probably two or three, but I love and respect why that dude says four. And there are all-stars, and there are guys who are all-star adjacent, where you could kind of make the case, and there's not a wrong answer, even though you have to leave some people off those lists, whether you're a voter or your media member or whoever you are. And Cleveland's got a few of those, too.
Bill Ryder, host of the daily podcast Beyond the Arc, which is live at noon Eastern on YouTube. You can also find it wherever you get your podcast in the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So if we throw Kenny Atkinson into this equation as well, plus the roster itself, and hell, throw Kobe in there as well, who is the Cavs' MVP so far this season?
Sorry, Kobe, if you're listening. I know Kobe hired Kenny Atkinson, and it's Kenny Atkinson for me. I mean, just into our earlier conversation, which was also a really great question. You found a way to make the backcourt be a strength, and I think for me, more importantly, you found a way to make the frontcourt and make Allen and Mobley in particular as a tandem players that can play together and play on the same roster. And you can have the best offense in the NBA with those two guys. And obviously, defensively, you have so much rim protection and so much help there, too. I think it's Atkinson. And I think there's a lot of guys we can praise. Kenny Atkinson is one of the – if you were to extend that question to the whole NBA, right, just MVPs of the NBA beyond just players, Kenny Atkinson is pretty high for me on that list.
What's the ceiling for Evan Mobley to you?
You know how people always want to be right and they hold on to it? I've believed in Evan Mobley for way too long. So I think he can be the best, or because of this incredibly talented freak of nature in Victor Wembanyama, you know, one of the best defensive players in the league for a long time. He can be in Cleveland, his fourth best offensive weapon, but I think he can be a serious offensive weapon. He's never going to be a top 10 player in the NBA, but a guy that is, you know, in the top, I do these lists every year, top 20 or top 25, who's a defensive stalwart and who is on both sides of the floor a difference maker, the kind of guy that if he's your fourth best player, your third best player, you're in really good shape to be a contender. That is who he can be, and it's what he is this year, and I think there's still a ceiling that he can get to. I think what we've seen this season is the beginning of him reaching his heights.
Bill, do the Cavs have anything left to prove in the regular season with roughly 46 games to go?
No, I mean, just hold off Boston, right? I mean, we have seen teams be really good into January and have the wheels come off, and that's usually injury, knock on wood. That happened to the Pelicans a couple of years ago when Zion got hurt, and we've seen teams be really mediocre heading into January and then turn it around. I mean, you guys know this, see the Cavs, LeBron's first year back under David Blatt when they were at or just under 500. They let LeBron play point forward starting mid-January. So it's a big sample size. Things can turn, and it does get harder, disease of more Pat Riley talked about, to maintain the level when people suddenly start giving you their best shot every single night. So you just hold on to what you're doing. But the fact they beat the Thunder last night, to me, speaks to the reality they're probably going to be able to handle being now labeled, for me, it's the best team in the NBA, but one of the best teams in the NBA. But the answer is just keep on keeping on and don't let go of whatever you've been doing to get to the level you've gotten to.
Bill, since the Donovan trade, Kobe really has not made any foundational moves. There's been good moves, you know, the Strus signing. There have been some moves, but really, I mean, since Donovan, that's been it. Should the Cavs view their 32-4 start as validation that they don't need to change the roster at all before the playoffs this year? Or is it actually a sign to make a move because you've got a damn good team and maybe better than they expected?
So I'm a big believer in giving things time to bake, and I'm going to praise somebody that I never praise, and I'm going to. Like, give credit to Dan Gilbert, too. I mean, just the patience to let Kobe Altman see this thing through and to say, okay, maybe it hasn't worked, but maybe it can. I don't think you need to make big, substantial moves. Now, I don't cover that team every day, so I'm going to guess here, and you guys will know better than me, but I do know, having covered the NBA and been a beat person in the past, chemistry matters, the locker room matters, guys liking each other matters. And it doesn't always matter in the regular season. It absolutely does in the playoffs. See a bunch of Chris Paul teams that have fallen apart in the postseason. Get my CP3 shot of the day. And And so if these guys like each other and it's harmonious, and it sounds like it is from a distance, then adding someone becomes less important, or at least it's more important to make sure who you're bringing doesn't disrupt that. So, no, I think they've let this thing cook. They've let this thing bake. They've made some supplemental pieces. Most teams, especially if you don't have a LeBron James or a Steph Curry, and even Steph needed this, need years and years. See the Boston Celtics last year. It took a long time to win a title to sort of move their way up the ladder. I don't think big changes are needed, and I think this Cavs team has been given the rarest thing in sports, and that is time. And at this point, now that it's working, I wouldn't mess with it too much.
Bill, we talked about the Celtics. Anybody else in the East that you feel like the Cavs should be fearful of?
Yeah, the Boston Celtics. I mean, other than the Celtics. I mean, so like, no. I'm not sure. The Knicks might be a yes. Their defense before this little sort of lull was for a month, going back to mid-December to just a week ago, was top four, which hadn't been true even when they'd been playing well. And their offense had been great, and Cat obviously has been integrated really well. I'm sort of skeptical the defense is going to maintain itself. I'm a little Carl Anthony Towns agnostic when it comes to the postseason, as some people are on Donovan Mitchell. And their head coach, even though they're only 48-minute games, wants to play all the starters 48 minutes and then like make them play five-minute scrimmages or something afterwards. And I do worry he's just going to grind down those guys into little nubs by the end of the thing. So maybe the Knicks, the Miami Heat. I've talked to sources there. They, you can laugh, but I'm not saying it's my opinion. They think they're a contender. They think they can beat Boston or Cleveland. I don't think that, especially the Jimmy Butler drama. But the answer is no. I mean, maybe if Orlando gets right, I don't think they score enough points. You got to be top 10 in offensive and defensive rating to actually make a run to the finals. Cleveland does that. Boston does that. Nobody else in the East does that. I don't believe in the Milwaukee Bucks. They're too inconsistent. I don't think Doc Rivers is a proven winner, despite what he did in Boston a million years ago. So all that to say, no, I think it's a two-horse race in the Eastern Conference. Maybe the Knicks, but I'm not sold yet.
Bill, great stuff as always, buddy. Always great to hear your voice. Keep killing it. Love the Beyond the Arc podcast, obviously. JP and I are both on weekends on Affinity Sports Network, so we catch Writer Than You whenever we can as well. Keep killing it, buddy.
Thanks, boy. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Bill Ryder there. Beyond the Arc, live at noon Eastern. It's a daily podcast on YouTube. You can also check it out wherever you get your podcasts. Bill joining us there on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. And great stuff from Bill. And this is the kind of thing you say when you're 32-4 like the Cavs are. 92.3 The Fan. They have nothing left to prove in the regular season. I'm more where Bill is. Listen, I get when you're 32-4, you say things like, because you don't play 890 often in any sport, let alone basketball.
Yeah.
I get that you say, I don't need to prove anything else. I think the biggest thing they need to prove is that you can do something at this level for 82 games before you get to the postseason.
Yeah, and listen, for a lot of fans, they might be saying the biggest thing they need to do is just make sure they don't hit the usual landmines that we've seen in April and May, and really leading up to the end of the season with this Cavs team the past couple years, which has been injuries more than anything else. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. That's a beautiful place to be in. I think it's interesting how after one game against, and we know the Thunder, they give it their all. They're a bunch of tryhards, bunch of gym class heroes, and that's what makes it impressive is that we finally got to play a team that we know with certainty matches what the Cavs do and like trying their best. I think it's interesting how 24 hours later, we've just seen so many different people now emphatically claim that the Cavs are the best team in basketball.
Yeah, and it's so funny because there's when somebody says the Cavs are the two best team in basketball, it's important to remember that you're talking regular season.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because this, again, like so much of the NBA is cool, you did something 36 times. Now go do it another 46 times. And then if you do it 82 times, they're going to say, cool, try and do it 28 more times in the postseason. And so I think it's important to say, yeah, what they're saying is they're the best team in the regular season, which I don't think it's even a debate anymore. I mean, especially if it's 7 days from now, if you take the second game with Chet in the game, that even adds more credence to the idea that as good as really OKC, Boston, and Cleveland are, Cleveland, at least in the regular season, is one cut above.
Yeah, I don't think it's debatable when it comes to the regular season. But that's never been my issue. My issue's never been the regular season with the Cavs. It's always been, what do you do in the next level? And the cool thing about last night is that we got to get a little bit of a glimpse into how they'll coach into the next level, into a postseason matchup. And last night, Nick, the fun part about it is that is the closest thing to a postseason game that we can dream up. And they passed that test. That's a very cool thing.
So I'm saying, if you do this 46 more times, that's all I really need to see. And by the way, I'm not expecting an 890 winning percentage.
Before we get to the postseason, you're gonna. I don't know what that means.
No, I just need to see throughout the rest of the regular season that you can play at something close to this level, and secure the number one seed. Maybe that's more what this is about. Play well enough to keep the number one seed.
Let me ask you this. Will we get to a spot at any point at the end of the season, before the postseason gets underway, before we play a single postseason basketball game, where you're like, I have the Cavs winning the NBA Finals?
If they play 890 basketball, it's going to be impossible not to. I fought every urge to just be like, screw it. The Cavs are winning the title this year. After what? And it's not just last night. It's the cumulative effect of 32-4. I mean, when you're on pace to win 73-74 games.
And it's fine. Last night can do things for people because it was such a win in such a cool way. Yesterday, you were also wondering whether or not they should break up the core four and trade for Cam Johnson. You see the shift here.
Oh, no. I didn't say break up the core four. Trade for Cam Johnson to supplement the core four. That was my point.
Okay, so in that instance, then you're trading Caris LeVert. You're breaking up at least some part of this Cavs team.
Yeah, Caris and probably George for Cam Johnson and maybe De'Ron Sharp, who I'm obsessed with as a backup. Because he's just a round mound of sound. He's just going to knock people around.
I kind of
went Collinsworth there. Here's a guy. It was not great. There's a lot to unpack there. But
I mean, because if they're winning at an 890 clip, though, a lot of people would just say, well, just roll the ball out there and continue to do that.
Yeah, I get it. Here's the thing. Knowing and paying attention to the Cavs and how they've operated since Donovan got here, I think Kobe, and you can call it careerist, which at points I think has been fair. You can call it just a conservative nature and trying to give this thing as much time to breathe, which it could be both things, by the way. But I think Kobe's probably going to use 32-4 as a justification to not make a move. And I would say 32-4 says, hey, you're actually ahead of where you want to be, or at least right on schedule. If there's a player that can protect you in a playoff series against both, because here's the thing, it's not just the Celtics, it's the Knicks too.
For sure.
They got wings for days. If there's a player, not a superstar, but a really, really good...
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Fifth guy is your fifth starter. If that finishing piece is there, do it this year. I think it's going to be the opposite. I think he's going to use it as justification and not make that move. Well, let's see what we have.
Yeah.
I'm saying, no.
No, it's an interesting discussion because you are, we talked about this with the Guardians last year, right? Were they starting to peak a year or two earlier than maybe even they expected? I think this Cavs team right now, being the best regular season team in basketball, they're peaking a little bit earlier than even they could have expected. So is this the time where you do shake up the snow globe just a little bit? I favor in the idea of you keep Caris here because the relationship he's got with Donovan, I think matters a ton. The fact that they're really good buddies. And I do think there is something to the idea that you have trust built in. I don't know what bringing somebody else in the equation will look like. So there is a part of me that is playing a little safe in that respect.
216-474-0092. Do the Cavs need to prove anything else in the regular season for you? Just do it 46 more times at a very comparable level. And it's at some point, another month from now, and it might not even take a month, it's going to be impossible to not do the thing of, I'm watching this every game. If you're not watching this team every day, I understand why NBA folks take forever to come around to a team like Cleveland that they might watch, if we're lucky, once a week, and they might just go, oh, that's so cute. Totally get it. Totally get it. But if you're watching it every single night like you and I are, it's so hard.
No, but you know what the difference is that now games like tonight against Toronto and a bad team where you're favored by 15.5 becomes a snooze fest.
You ready? I don't think it's going to be an issue. I think without Donovan tonight, I think you're going to wax these Raptors. They're 1-18
at home. No, that's my point, is that these aren't competitive games.
No, that's the good part.
What I loved about last night so much was that it was the first time in it seems like a month, we watched the Cavs play a game where I'm like, oh, they have to try really hard. And oh, there's lead changes. I hadn't seen that many lead changes in 40 days.
This is the beautiful yin and yang here. I love games like last night. But then when you have a game like that, where it was four quarters of clenching tonight, Just kick your feet up. If you got a, smoothie maker, make a nice little smoothie there. Put a little kale in that bee. Get wild. And just sit back and just watch it happen.
When's the last time you put kale in a smoothie?
The year was 1997. Yeah. It's actually like 3 years ago when I wasn't eating like a when I wasn't going full fat ass, as the kids say. Let's go with you choose here.
Don.
Don, welcome to the show, Don.
How you guys doing today?
Very well. Thank you for joining us, bud. What you got?
So, I'm sorry, repeat the question you were asking as you segued into this.
Do the Cavs need to prove anything else in the regular season this year?
Oh, okay, I had a point, and then you threw that question out. So, to me, no. Prove that you can play and not get hurt, I guess, is all I want to see. Because last night's win was huge. I've been watching the Cavs since the George Karl days, and they took on the Celtics in the playoffs, and they outscored them in the playoffs but lost the series. So a long time. And this is a top five franchise regular season win. Not that it matters, but it was that big of an atmosphere. Oklahoma City is that good of an opponent. They were missing an awesome player. And the beauty of it is we were kind of too, because Donovan didn't play that great in terms of putting the ball in the hoop. So awesome win. And proving what else they have to prove. They have the best record. They have all the metrics covered, but the shooting percentages across the board. Awesome defense, not just awesome offense. It's got me to the point now where I'm starting to look at, should we expect 67, 68 wins? Because we're 19-1. We're not halfway through the season, so we got 21 more home games. 68, 69 wins out of the question?
It's definitely not out of the question. Thank you, Don. The only thing I worry about with that, Nick, is that we have played the NBA's easiest schedule up until this point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've been waxing teams and we're taking care of business with ease. But even if you look at the upcoming schedule, like, you can see where it gets a little bit tougher. You can see where some landmines are there.
I like landmines.
I like watching competitive basketball games. That's what made last night so fun.
Landmines kind of teach you more about your team than, 30-point wins over Toronto. I will say, like, the previous Cavs high is that 08-09 Cavs team where they won 66 games.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't feel untouchable.
For sure.
And that's insane. Like,
Vegas had it, 48, 49 entering the season?
Yeah, even 60 wins felt like okay. And, if this team gets to 60 wins, it'll be the third time they've done it in franchise history and the only time without LeBron James.
Yeah, when you get over 66, though, you're hitting very rarefied air in NBA history. Those teams are NBA Finals teams. It's not even a question.
I mean, even 60. How many times do we get 60 wins in a season from an NBA team? Maybe once a year? And we're not guaranteed 60 wins either. So it's just bizarre, but bizarre in the best possible way. Do the Cavs need to prove anything else in the regular season? And one Browns domino has fallen, and another looks pretty close to being ready to go as well. 92.3 The Fan. Yesterday, it was the Bloom Diddler, Mike Bloomgren, being hired as the O-line coach.
Nobody calls him that.
I'm starting it. I'm making it a thing.
If that becomes a thing, I'll be very impressed. I don't think it's going to stick, though.
This, we are all Kipnesses, the core four. My branding abilities know no bounds. We did find out. Tommy Rees is already interviewed for the OC job. Clint Kubiak is a name that continues to pop up. And then the two names that have entered the chat for this one today are Charles London and Daryl Bevel.
Yeah, the Bevel one makes sense because of the relationship with Stefanski in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense if you're somebody that's like, that's just a name that's been around for a really long time. But they work together in Minnesota. He's worked with a lot of really... what you would say notable quarterbacks, Nick. That's all he's drawing from, though, is the Minnesota connection there.
Also, he's just another AVP. He's a guy that no one will misconstrue as a threat to Kevin Stefanski.
Yeah.
And
100%. He's going to do his job.
And he's not going to get a head coaching job ever.
Yeah, yeah. Which, sometimes in life, I get why Stefanski would want to hire somebody like that.
Well, I don't mean in a bad way. I mean, the threat thing you might be perceiving, he's not Mike Vrabel is really what I meant on that, is a guy that you might have me calling for next year as the head coach if next year goes awry again. But Bevel, to me, I think it actually makes a lot of sense. I don't know if the Cavs do this intentionally, but I think a benefit to the Cavs was having AVP for the first 3 years and having that.
You mean the Browns.
The Browns, yeah. But having him for the first 3 years, I think if you hire Bevel and he's here for 6 years, because he's not going to get head coaching looks,
mm-hmm.
That's the kind of continuity that you just don't get if you hire a Clint Kubiak or Tommy Rees, who in a year or two might be a head coaching candidate.
Oh, yeah, Tommy Rees is not going to be here for long. Like, if Stefanski, if he picks a quarterback and then this is awesome and everything turns around and everything's great, Tommy Rees is going to end up as a college head coach. He's going to end up as a offensive coordinator where he gets to call the plays somewhere else. Like, the sky's the limit for someone like Tommy Rees.
So I said
this is almost a retirement gig for Bevel.
I said yesterday, and I will cling to this, that the most important domino has already fallen, which is the O-line coach.
Sure.
And it's not that I don't like Mike Bloomgren. It's not that I don't like
him. Maybe that's why they perceived the morning show did that you didn't like the hire, is because you called him the Bloom Diddler.
Branding, that's one of the signs that I like you. If I've tried to give you a brand, I mean, come on. What more can I do to show love?
Sure. Diddler, I don't know, does it the right way, but that's okay.
Doesn't mean he literally diddles. Come on, guys. It's just a nickname. All right? Donovan Mitchell isn't literally a spider, okay? It's just not take this literally. Your boy took a pound. But specific to this, I think Bloomgren was the most important hire because I think the O-line, you need to get back to marrying what you do up front, your run fits with the rest of your offense, and that's how you get back to the old offense. More importantly than, honestly, personnel at this point is just what you're doing up front and the fact that it all makes sense with each other.
Yeah. I think it's very interesting that between the offensive line and then even the offensive coordinator, for as often as we've talked about Alex Van Pelt and how instrumental people believe he was to the success of Stefanski, and then how often people ripped Ken Dorsey, the laissez-faire nature of it all is so interesting to me. Being like, oh, it doesn't really matter. He can hire whoever he wants to hire. Oh, okay.
Because I think if we're really honest,
he's the same people that 3 months from now, or 3 months during the season, are going to be yelling at the person that he hires.
Yeah, but I think if we're real honest, the real failure on the offensive front in 2024 was Kevin Stefanski. Kevin Stefanski is the guy who his failure to help Ken Dorsey build the offense as the offensive head coach, it didn't matter who the OC was. Because that's what Kevin's there for. Kevin's supposed to be the guy.
Yeah, but they just moved so much around Deshaun.
It just was never gonna work.
Listen,
but I think my point is, like, with Kevin going back to his old offense, he knows his old offense better than anyone.
Yeah.
So how I'm assuming this is going to go is you're there to do the game plan, which Kevin's going to have a say in, and then Kevin's going to call the plays. I don't want to say you're Kevin Stefanski's do boy, but you're kind of Kevin Stefanski's do-boy as the OC.
Which in a lot of systems, that's kind of how it works, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not a foreign concept to be like, you execute out my plans and you are the, what'd you call him, a do-boy?
A do-boy, yeah.
Yeah, like you're the do-boy.
So, we both say do-boy in a very demonstrative way.
Wait, you said it almost like it was like the Pillsbury Doughboy for a second, going off of.
No, it's like messenger boy.
It sounds very demeaning when we say it, doesn't it?
It's not great.
We
say it with authority, but.
With authority.
I do think that this is an interesting litmus test into how far your opinion of Stefanski has fallen. And I want to call back to Andrew Berry, who spoke on who made the Dorsey hire one year ago, and this Jason Lloyd question about due diligence and the fact that the Browns did due diligence. Buffalo said, here's who Ken Dorsey is, and they still hired him anyways. Because I think this is a great part to kind of inject into the conversation.
When it comes to the coaching staff, yeah, that's Kevin's decision. It's Kevin's responsibility. Number two, like with anyone that we bring into the organization, we do a lot of diligence, as you reference. I think the circumstances this year across a variety of levels, you know, we're not ideal for the offensive staff, just being quite blunt. But in terms of Ken Dorsey, he's a good coach. All the work that we had done on him, that Kevin had done on him, you know, we felt really comfortable with what we were bringing into the building.
So I think kind of having that as a backdrop. Again, yeah. Kevin hired him, and then we did due diligence, and we didn't listen. So the same things that failed you because they were the same thing that failed Ken in Buffalo. I think it's fair, and I think you brought up a great question in the pre-show, whether our confidence should be changed in Stefanski's ability, not all the other stuff, but just solely on his ability to hire assistants.
Yeah, I wonder if, because it feels like we're giving him such a pass of like, well, whatever he decides, and he's going to be able to, he'll have it figured out. And we have this, just so much, I don't know, belief in Stefanski to be able to get this right, whether this is Bloomgren or whether this is the new offensive coordinator hire. And I'd ask you, Nick, Where does that belief stem from? Like, who is he hired as an assistant that we look back and we're like, oh, that was great? Because think about it. Callahan was hired at the exact same time as Stefanski. That was not a Stefanski hire. Stump Mitchell, like all the people that we hold in such high regard, is the only one I can think of, maybe the defensive coordinator and Jim Schwartz, but even that one, I don't know that that was an actual Kevin Stefanski hire. He's only been responsible for the offensive side of the ball. So I don't know. Who do we give credit to as far as a great assistant that he's brought in?
We're about to really get into the nits and grits here because this is actually something I think Kevin has done well up until this year. I think Schwartz has been a tremendous hire.
Is that him, though? I genuinely don't know.
No, I mean, I actually do give him credit for Bill Callahan because I had heard the only way Bill was coming here was if Kevin got hired, and that's somebody that's not in his coaching tree. They didn't cross paths. That's a tough pull.
Yeah, they were hired at the exact same time. And so if Stefanski's the reason why, but that isn't Stefanski as a head coach saying, I identify him and this is what I want.
So beyond that, so I give him Schwartz, I give him Callahan.
Yeah, and I'm ready to give him Schwartz.
I really think Brandon Lynch, who's their DB coach, this is where we're getting, like, that's a future head coach.
It's very nitty-gritty, but okay.
But that's a guy he brought from Minnesota, and there's a thought that he could be an NFL head coach pretty quickly if he wants to be, but if things go right here in Cleveland. Does he get credit for Petzing? Because he never elevated him to OC, but Petzing is now getting head coaching jobs, and he started out as the tight ends coach.
It's a hard time giving him credit when I just ripped him yesterday and being like, did you see the Cardinals offense? Why is this guy getting head coaching opportunities?
I didn't realize Petzing was a Mr. Clean candidate, by the way. I didn't realize he was bald. Threw me away. You hear a name, Drew Petzing, and you're like, who's this young stallion? And then he showed up, and it was like, oh, okay. That's off-putting.
So based off of what you're telling me, you feel like he's got enough in the time he's been here to be like, yeah, you just do every picks, it's going to be fine?
I mean, it's shook. It is more shook now than it was a year ago. But yeah, like a year ago, I didn't question it because I'm like, Schwartz, Callahan.
I mean, you can make an argument. Tommy Rees is right now considered a pretty good. Candidate because he's interviewed for college head coaching jobs. He's like the future of the sport in people's eyes.
And I actually did like that hire a year ago, more so than I did Ken Dorsey or specifically Andy Dickerson. I did not like that one. I was told Bill Callahan isn't that important, though. I heard that on some show. I can't remember what it was. But no, I mean, it's definitely shaken. But in the end, like a year from now, whether it's Daryl Bevel. Who feels like his first name should be Darren? Whether it's Daryl Bevel or Tommy Rees.
Because he spells it not like Daryl Ryder. Like, it's a different way of spelling it.
I'm not going to be like, that hire. That's what. But I might about the O-line. Like, this O-line hire could be the difference for me being like, get this clown out of here. Or, I mean, Kevin. Or maybe the front office needs to do the hiring going forward. Or, hey, man, Kevin hit it out of the park. But it's definitely not the OC spot. 216-474-0092. I think it's a great question, though. Do you have confidence, full confidence, in Kevin Stefanski's ability to hire assistants? And Pete Futek covers what Ohio State must do to beat Texas on 92.3 The Fan.